Welcome to the Art of Modern Azure Deployments. This session was delivered at CloudWorst 2015 in Stockholm, Sweden. Unfortunately, however, we had some technical difficulties with the recording at the beginning of my session, which means that you missed out with the introduction of who I am and what I'm going to talk about. So we can rectify that right now. My name is Rick Hepworth. I am an Azure MVP, and I'm also IT director at a company in the UK called Black Marble. And this session is all about Azure resource templates. What are they? Why should you use them, other than, of course, they're cool? And based on my experience, how you should go about creating them, how you can test them, and a few tips and tricks of what I've learned along the way. Without further delay, let's hand back to the recording of the session. Enjoy. Resource templates are a way of defining an environment of services. We're all building applications now that are increasingly complicated, and they're made by fastening together the different Lego bricks that Azure gives us in new and interesting ways. But deploying those applications is really tricky. We've either got lots and lots and lots of things in a written list, and people start clicking in the portal and deploying stuff. Or we might have got more advanced than that, and we've started to write some PowerShell. But it's difficult to manage, it's difficult to maintain, it's difficult to repeat. Resource templates are trying to tackle that issue. It is a declarative template that says, this is what I want the configuration of my services to be. The templates are in JSON format, which as an IT guy would not have been my first choice, but there we are. We can create those JSON templates. We define our resources. We have a parameters file that can go with our template, so we can ask questions, if you like, in our template. What do we want the resource to be called? Where do we want to deploy it to? And our accompanying parameters file answers those questions. So immediately, we can have a parameters file for test, for UAT, for live. And importantly, it's idempotent. I can apply my template and deploy the resources, and I can reapply the template. And it will set the state of those resources to be whatever it says in the template. So, you know, Magnus likes to play. He comes along and he reconfigures my Azure storage services. I reapply the template. It puts it back to what it was. Don't do it again. So these things are really quite powerful. Let me show you how powerful. So this is my Azure subscription. I realize that's small, it's deliberate, just so you can see what I've got in here. What I'm going to talk about today, the template that I'm using, deploys an environment that we are working on for an application that we're building at Black Marble. Right now, this template deploys 6 servers. By the time I've finished, it's going to have to deploy about 14. Now, this is the resource group that's deployed into, and you can see there, 6 servers. But that's not the whole story. That's my complete list of resources, because every server has a NIC. The ones that are public-facing are attached to load balancers. They're all attached to a virtual network. There are some public IP addresses in there. There's some storage in there. That's really complicated. You know, if I was to deploy that by hand, I'd be here all day. I'm going to deploy it for you. I have here my PowerShell window, okay? And this is how I deploy my environment of 6 servers. So I'm just going to F8 this. So I have a PowerShell command that deploys a new resource group. And you can see here I specify a template file. I'm putting some other parameters in as well. I'll talk about those in a bit. If I just F8 that, my PowerShell takes my template, uploads it to Azure, and I'm starting deploy. Now, I've done that deliberately because I want to show you what happens while we're deploying. So that's now going to push out 6 servers. With a bit of luck, it'll be finished by the end of the session. So, why should we use resource templates? Isn't it a lot easier to just run one line of PowerShell to deploy 12 servers than, you know, a gazillion lines of PowerShell? There are four reasons that I really jump up and down on for this one. At Black Marble, we live and die by our development processes. We're great. We've got Team Foundation Server. We've got all our analytics. We're doing continuous integration. We do automated builds. Our lab manager environment overnight can take the latest build, deploy an environment of servers, push our application onto it, then we can do automated testing and generate reports. But the guys in IT have to create those lab manager environments. And once you've created them, that's it. They're not really modifiable. And if you want another one, you've got to create another one from scratch. They're not version controlled. If we don't document what we did, how can we do it again repeatedly? The great thing about the Azure resource template approach is it's config as code. It fits nicely into the cool kids DevOps world, so we're all right there, but it's version controlled. Our template goes in our source control along with our application. Here's our code for our app. Here's our code to deploy the environment to run it on. A template is an awful lot easier to read than scripts, despite the fact they can get quite complicated. When you start looking at them, it's very, very straightforward because you go, right, I've got a server there, these are the settings. You're not looking at a sequence of PowerShell that says, create a new storage account, create a new virtual hard disk, create a new virtual machine, do something else, stand on one leg. Deployment is incredibly efficient. But more importantly, deployment, because of that single line of PowerShell, is very straightforward to wire into your existing build process. Release process. I was talking this morning to guy who's got Octopus. They use Octopus Deploy. Fine. So we've got a tentacle on one machine. That tentacle can run the PowerShell to deploy our resource template. And then we can install, if we want, tentacles onto the individual machines we've just deployed, and they can push our application out. Importantly, it really does fit with the modern worldview where we're trying to get config as code. We're trying to remove those issues of moving from dev to dev test to acceptance test to deployment to live, to really try and smooth that process and remove all the bumps and pitfalls. Creating these things is easy by varying definitions of the word easy. If you're a rock star, you can code this by hand. It's JSON. There is tooling available. It's good tooling, but it's young tooling. So it's continuously improving and changing. So right now, we're at the version ships with Azure SDK 2.7.1. I started using this a good few versions ago. It's coming in leaps and bounds. You've got to make sure you keep your Azure SDK up to date to get the better tooling. And we're going to end up using PowerShell, not necessarily to author the templates themselves, but to deploy the templates. And because, as I'll show you later, we can push PowerShell scripts into resources we create like virtual machines to do post-deployment configuration as part of the template. So learn PowerShell or learn Golf. So just as a quick show of hands, how many of you guys already write PowerShell? Good. For the recording, that's a lot better than the UK, because that was about 3/4 of it. You do this in the UK, I might do a bit of PowerShell, but I don't really want to admit it. It's really crucial. You need to know PowerShell, you need to know DSC, you need to know Azure. Deployment, once we've got our template, is really easy. There's two ways of doing it there. There is actually a third, which is called PowerShell splatting, which bends my head, so I'm not going to talk about that one. Basically, it's the same PowerShell command line here in both cases. The top option, you can see that I'm specifying a template file and a parameters file. So I've got a JSON file that answers the questions that are in my template, and PowerShell says, right, I want to do a new deployment. This is the name of the resource group. Read this template file to tell you what to build, and this parameters file to answer the questions. What I've found as I've been doing the development on this is parameter files are a pain. Don't get me wrong, they're great as part of your build and deployment processes. You should have a a production parameter file and a test parameter file. When you're building this stuff, you're continuously editing the parameters file and saving it and rerunning the PowerShell, editing the parameters file, saving it. Drives you crazy. So the PowerShell offers us a really, really cool solution to this. And what it does is, if I specify a parameter in my template, so I've got a parameter I'll show you in a bit called env prefix in my template, I can add that to the PowerShell command line just as a straight parameter. So I can have a PowerShell command, which is what you saw me run, which is just, you know, sitting in a text file, that specifies the answers to all of the questions in my parameters, in my template file, and I just hit go and off it trots. Now that's really important. Why is it important? Because a parameter file, if we're using release management, might be a pain. Because we might want to feed some of these answers in as dynamic variables as part of our release pipeline. How many of you guys have used Microsoft Release Manager? I might have used Release Manager, but I don't really. The user interface sucks. But it's a really good driver for good practice. So in release management, you define a release pipeline, okay, a set of steps that you perform to deploy your app. And you then replicate that pipeline for your different environments, dev, test, live. But importantly, the steps are the same. All we do is change the answers to certain questions. So release manager wants to feed in variables into our pipeline. Well, we could make it mangle the parameters file for us, but actually it's a whole lot easier just to feed its answers into our deployment command line. So I make a lot of use of that one for our continuous deployment rather than the top option. However, there's always an interesting, it's not a downside to this stuff, but this is where it gets a little difficult. How do you monitor our automated deployment? I've thrown a template file at Azure, and the Azure Resource Pixies have taken that deployment file and are now busy running around creating the resources for me. But they're not telling me what's going on. So I need a way of peering into the cloud and seeing what's being deployed. There's an important term that you need to know and understand how it relates to a template and how it relates to Azure, which is a deployment. So when we create a resource group in Azure, if we provision a resource into that resource group, the act of doing that is a deployment. Now, a deployment can push more than one resource out. So a template will normally configure and create and trigger a deployment. And what you can see here in the screenshot I've got, this is my resource group. Up at the top in the Essentials panel, there's a little deployment section. And it just says, last deployment, and when did you do it? If you click that link, what you actually see is another panel. And each of these is a separate deployment act that I've taken against that resource group. And if I click an individual deployment, I can see what it's done. Now, the text is a little small. I'll show you this in a moment live. But down here are the lists of resources that got provisioned. And here are the parameters from the template file I used to configure the deployment. If I reapply a template to a resource group, another deployment gets added to that list because it's another act of doing some configuration on that resource group. So there's a direct connection between a deployment and a template, but I can repeatedly deploy a template and each one is a new deployment. With me? Make sense? Grand. Doesn't really help us though, because that really only shows us what's happened. Doesn't really show us what's going on. Enter stage left, the Azure Resource Explorer, which is over here. This is fantastic. It's a website that allows me to execute calls against the REST API to see what's in my Azure subscription. Now, this has two really great uses. One, I can see what my deployment's doing. I'll show you that in a moment. And two, I can create a resource through the portal and look at the JSON that was used to create that resource and copy it and paste it. Isn't that handy? Yeah, so I mean, genuinely, the guys at Microsoft, there have been various conversations that have been taking place on mailing lists about having tools that can generate the JSON for a template from an existing resource. And yeah, that's great. You can do it already. You just copy and paste. So that's it for slides. What I'm going to do now is show you how to create a new template, how the tooling works, and then I'm going to show you mine, and talk about what I do, why I do it, and hopefully give you some guidance for doing this yourselves. I will throw a quick caveat in. Because I am the only IT pro in the room, this is an IaaS template deploying virtual machines. You go off people right quick, you know. However, there's nothing to stop you using exactly the same approach to deploy your SQL Azure and your web role and whatever you need within your environment. It just happens that what I've been working on has been virtual machines, which has been interesting. So, that's my blank one. Actually, as a quick... Just to show you that our template's still chugging away, you can see that I'm getting some telemetry back from Azure saying, we've started to provision some of the things that are in my template. So it's started to provision a storage account, it's started to provision a virtual network. I'm going to come on to that in a moment because the deployment order is important. So let's create a new template. It's really, really hard. You install the SDK, you go, new project. And in cloud, we've got an Azure resource group. And if we create a new resource group project, it goes away and talks to Azure. This works really well when you're on the train with no internet connection. So it's gone and talked to Azure, and it said, hey, Azure, I want to create a new template. Have you got some really helpful starter for 10s up there that we can get going with? So in this list, I can create templates to deploy all of these wonderful things. Or if I scroll right down to the bottom, I can do what I actually want to do, which is create a new blank one. And my machine will chug. I want a Surface Pro 4. And we now have a new project. The important stuff is in the templates folder over here. Okay, you've got two files that it gives you, deployment template JSON and deployment template param.dev.json. You can probably guess what they are from the names. If I open our deployment template, we see a nice new bit of UI up here, which is our JSON outline view. My recommendation is to start by banging things into the template with the JSON outline view. Don't add resources by hand. You can. There are places with sample code that you can copy and paste. The reason I say don't is because the schemas for this are a continuously advancing feast, and you really want the latest version when you start the template. If you do this through the tooling, it will always give you the right markup for the latest version of the schema. So I'm going to talk about what these four blocks are here in a second, but in order to illustrate that, we kind of need to add a resource. So let's add a resource. The tooling is quite intelligent, which is lovely. So to show you how, I'm going to come down and I'm going to add a new virtual machine. So way down here, I've got a Windows virtual machine. Okay, and the tooling at this point is looking at the schema and going, ah, right, okay, what do we need to know to be able to create a virtual machine? Well, we're going to have to give it a name. Cloud Bursty, aha. It knows that we have to have a storage account to put the VHDs in. I don't have one in this template right now. If I did, it would appear in the list. I don't, so I get a create new, which means it now gives me a storage account. So I can go, okay, I'll have a storage account. And it also knows that I have to have a virtual network to put it on. So I can create one of those. And if I now hit add, you see what it's done is placed four resources into my template. So up here, I've now got a storage account called Cloudburst, a virtual network called Cloudburst, a virtual machine called Cloudburst, and because a virtual machine has to attach to a virtual network through a NIC, it's created the virtual NIC for me as well. And the code for those, if I just click on each, you can see that it bounces around the code view. So if I go to my virtual machine, you can see in here that we've got a whole load of parameters. What's the name of our resource? What type of resource is it? Where is it going? Let's get the important thing out of the way first. There isn't really much IntelliSense on this. If you're the kind of dev that types something in and then tabs through the different methods and objects, you're going to have to read the docs for a change. It will do its best to point out errors, but right now, let's be honest, it's actually pretty crap at that. The only way to really pass a template to see if it works or not is to throw it at Azure, and the first thing Azure does is pass the template and tell you if there's an error with it. Yes, I'm sure that's going to improve. Does it slow you down? Actually, no, not really, because if you're building the template with the tooling, it generally does a pretty good job for you. So let's just return up to our four blocks up here and talk about what they are then. So you can see now that adding those resources in has added a bunch of extra stuff as well. So right at the top, we've got parameters, we've then got variables, and at the bottom, we've got outputs. Let's do outputs first, because I'm not really using outputs in my example, but I want to just talk about them. You can specify outputs in the template, so you can put a name and then feed a value in. That will appear in that deployment blade that I showed you in the screenshot a few moments ago. So you can pass information back out of the template. Now that's really important if you want to do something called nested deployments, which is what I'm going to show you when we start talking about my example. So you can call a template from within a template. So I can say, create a virtual machine. Oh, I don't want to do it in this template, I want to call that one. Here are the parameters. And when the virtual machine finishes, it hands back information as output, which I can then feed into another template. So you can do really, really complex tasks in a relatively simple way. Parameters are pretty straightforward. These are things that you are required to specify externally to the template at the point that you call it. It's things that we probably can't figure out programmatically, if you like. So things like location. Which data center do we want to put it in? You know, it's not psychic, it can't make it up. If I only ever want to deploy to one data center, I probably don't need to put this in as a parameter because I'm going to hard code it. So this is my first point of learning, if you like. If you use these the tooling and bang in resources, you get a huge number of parameters. And your template is really unmanageable really quickly. Look long and hard at those parameters. Decide which ones you actually need to be specifying at deployment time. And anything you don't, turn it into a variable. Which brings us to our second block. Variables. So my parameters I specify, and I can start to say, well, this is a valid value for this parameter or not. Variables I can then start to say, okay, well, this template needs this information, but it's always going to be the same for this template. Or this information is going to be created from information I've got elsewhere. My experience is I've tended to only have 3, 4, 5 parameters in a template, but I've got 70, 80, 90 variables. And most of those variables are doing something like this. So you get a simple set of commands that you can use within the variable block. So you can concat strings. You can base 64 a string, which is kind of useful if you're trying to feed an XML config file into a virtual machine, as I'll show you later. And you can fiddle with some of the values. So these variables are defining the answers to some of the questions that the resources need. And I use them in my templates for sort of common answers to questions. Or let's say for the sake of argument, I want to, as I do, I've got a prefix that I use. So I can define the prefix in a parameter block. My prefix is George. And then each virtual machine name is built by taking my prefix and adding a standard block on the end. So the environment's unique, but it's consistent within itself, which means it's a lot easier for me to start writing scripts that interact with different machines. The sheer size of parameter blocks and variable blocks are one of the key drivers that you will find when you start looking at whether you use one template or multiple templates. I'll talk about that more in a moment. So you can see in our resource section, let me just zoom in on that, that when I create a resource with my name and my type, I can feed those parameters into that resource. And I can feed a variable in just as easily. I can also, if I want to, do exactly the same kind of concatenation and string manipulation here. So I might want to say that display name is actually concat parameter brackets end prefix comma cloudburst. I can do that in there if I like. So again, if you're only ever going to use a variable once and it's not something you need to easily change, you might just want to consider sticking it in a line of its own in the resource. All right, I'm going to switch to my project, my own template now, to show you an example of how these things sort of evolve over time. So I'm actually going to talk through the whole deployment shenanigans with this because there's quite a lot of interesting stuff going on. But let me give you a quick overview of what this does. So I have 6 servers, a domain controller, an ADFS server, a WAP server, a proxy server that publishes it out, a web server sitting waiting to receive an app, another server whose role kind of went away, but we'll ignore that one, and a SQL server. Now, as you know, there is no way to deploy a domain controller in Azure. You can't just go, ha-ha, make me a domain controller. You've got to deploy a server and then turn it into a domain controller. But there is a way to deploy a SQL server. I don't have to install the software. And that uses images. And I can use those images in my resource template. Once I've created my servers, my bare servers, to do those activities like create a domain controller, I'm going to have to do something myself, manipulate those virtual machines. And to do that, I'm using DSC, Desired State Configuration. And there is a plugin, an extension for a virtual machine that will deploy a desired state. And that plugin is a resource. So let me just pull up my domain controller. So this template simply deploys the machine that is going to be the domain controller. And up here you can see I've got a NIC and a virtual machine, and that I'll come to in a second. Inside the virtual machine resource, nested within it, there are 3 extensions. These are the same extensions that if you're using the Azure portal, you can click on a virtual machine, go add new extension. I want Azure Diagnostics. I want an octopus tentacle. I want management agent. I configure these, I specify the details just like I would specify any other resource. So I say, okay, this is an Azure resource, this is my Azure IS Diagnostics. It depends on the virtual machine being provisioned. So I was talking earlier on about provisioning order. Now we've reached a point where it's reasonable to talk about it. So in my old PowerShell script, I had to do things very linearly. So I didn't create my second virtual machine till I'd finished work on my first. I could have got really clever and started to use PowerShell workflows or multiple threads and do things at the same time, but that really bends your head. With Azure, all I have to specify is a dependency. If I have no dependencies specified, Azure will try and deploy everything at the same time, which is great because it's really quick, until you need something to wait until something else is finished. And that's when the dependencies come in. So I have a set of dependencies in my deployment. I have to wait until the virtual network's deployed before I start deploying the virtual machines. I have to wait till the virtual machine's deployed before I start putting extensions onto it. And each of those extensions has a sequence. The really cool part is, providing I specify those, Azure will work out the most efficient way of deploying my environment. So if it can do things simultaneously, it will, and I don't need to worry about it. So looking at the PowerShell that's been running, you probably find, oh, not quite. Oh well, the one day I need this to actually run to time. So what would normally happen is once it's finished deploying the domain controller, which should have occurred by now, it then splats out about four different virtual machines simultaneously, because it can, because they don't depend on each other. The DSC extension, however, raises a conundrum. So when I create my template, I have a file, my template file. When I trigger my deployment, I run my PowerShell command, it takes that file and it uploads it to Azure. My DSC resource needs script files and other things to work. So where do they go? How do I get those? And the answer is that I can specify, so there's an entry here that says modules URL. And you can see that there's a very faffy bit of string there working out a URL. But the bottom line is that I can put files that I need for my deployment somewhere that Azure can get at them. Now, I say somewhere because it literally doesn't have to be in Azure. I could have a server backup base. So long as it's readable by Azure, and if it's backup base, it probably needs to be world readable, then it will download those files and use them. The correct way, if you like, is we push those files up into an Azure storage account, and we can provide our SAS token to the template, and it will go and get them. At this point, it starts to get messy because this is my project file for this template. So you can see my template, my actual template is down there, is one file, but suddenly I've got a whole tree structure of desired state files. This is the bit where the tooling stops helping you. It doesn't hinder you, but it does nothing to assist. And this is the bit that I just want to sort of make you stop and think about, that these deployments can get very complicated very quickly, and you should absolutely think and do a bit of a paper exercise as to the structure of your project and how you're going to manage these things. I'm relatively anal, so I have a folder for my DSC resources, and then within these subfolders are the individual DSC modules that I can use to configure a server. And then in here are the files that I use to actually apply the configuration. And that gets zipped and uploaded to Azure Storage. I have some nested templates here. They get uploaded to Azure Storage. The bit that's missing, the bit I think we need to figure out as people who are working on these templates is if you like, our deployment story for our deployment. What I really want to be able to do is to build this project. And as part of the build, the zip files get created. And then I upload it to Azure Storage. And then I can trigger it. So I can wire this into my release pipeline. That isn't really there yet. I know the team that are working on the tooling are looking at it. So coming back to our main template, I said earlier on I wanted to talk about nested deployments. He said, looking at the wrong template. So while I was building this project, I found a number of things. Thing the first is, if you have a very big template that is a lot of lines long, they're incredibly unreliable at deployment. So I originally had all six servers, all the extensions, everything in one template file. And if I hit a deploy, I could guarantee you that I had something like, well, it was less than a 50% hit rate. It was, you know, roll a dice, one in three would certainly fail. But it wasn't because there was a fault in the template. Different things would fail within that deployment. And what I found was, by making the template smaller, those problems went away. How do you make the template how do you make the template smaller? Because we can't make our environment less complicated. And the answer to that is that we can do this cool thing called a nested deployment. So there are two reasons you might do a nested deployment. And the first is the one that I've just talked about. I want to make my template simpler. So in my master template, I have a resource here, which is a little box. And that's this. This is a nested deployment. And what it actually is a link to another template. And this nested deployment says, right, here is the URL of the template I want to use, and here are the parameters that template requires. Go get that template, upload that to Azure, thanks very much, Azure Resource Manager, and do that deploy. And if you remember the blade that I show you at the start, that I'll show you again in a minute, there are actually quite a lot of deploys in that blade. That's because my one master template is a deployment, but then it triggers a deployment for each of the templates that are nested within it. There's a second reason that you might want to use a nested template, a nested deployment. And that's because you want to change something you've already deployed. So remember I said that this is declarative. You're saying what the state of the resource should be. Well, what if that state changes halfway through our deployment because of actions we've taken? A template, an individual template, can only have a single resource with a given unique name. So let me give you a good tacit example of this. When I deploy a virtual network, right? In a virtual network, it hands out all the IP addresses to the machines that are running on it. And it hands out the IP address of the DNS for that network, which is in Azure. At the point that I configure my domain controller, it now needs to be the DNS for my virtual network. That means that every machine after the DC needs to be told the IP address of the domain controller. But I don't know that until I've provisioned the DC. So I need to reconfigure the virtual network. And the way I do that is to have a nested deployment which calls a second template which re-specifies the configuration for that virtual network. When that's run, the network's already deployed, there's stuff on it, so it doesn't delete it and recreate it. It simply finds that one configuration difference, which is the DNS server, and changes it. So I can say, right, my domain controller depends on my virtual network, my reconfigure virtual network depends on my domain controller, and everything else depends on that reconfigure step. So you can start to build actions and really quite clever dependencies into your code. So I've got about 15 minutes to go. Let's start looking at how we see what's going on and what is going on. So this is the Ibiza portal. Let me just zoom in a bit. In true fashion, it doesn't always keep up, bless it. So I've got a new resource group, but it's not showing up in there. If I click on that, we should find that I have a CB2 demo. So this is the deployment that I've set going at the start of the session. And you can see that it's actually now decided to get quite a long way through. So it's created domain controller, ADFS, WAP, various other bits and pieces. I have a deployment up here. It says it's deploying. If I click that, we've actually got quite a few deployments. So I have two serve master at the bottom. This is the one, my main template. This is the one that kicked it all off. And I can look at that, and it shows me what I fed in as the parameters for my deployment. And it shows me down here at the bottom what steps have been triggered by that deployment. Have they completed or not? And each one of these that's in blue is a nested deployment. And as a result, they show up here as well. So I can come up here and I can look at my web server and see that it too has a bunch of parameters and it too is deploying resources. And I can see what's in progress. I can't really see anything more than that though. If I click on an individual item, I can see that it succeeded. Fantastic. If I click on one in progress, I don't really see very much. I can't see what it's doing. Now, that's possibly okay if it's a storage account, it's a very binary, it's out there or it's not. But when you start to look at things like applying a DSC extension or running a custom script extension, there's things happening on the server. I want to look at the debug. How do I get that? How do I see what's going on? And that's where our resource manager comes in. Resource Explorer, sorry. Before I switch to that, I just want to show you something that I've no idea when it turned up. There's a bit of a standing joke that every time I'm doing a session like this, they update the portal a couple of days before just to catch me off guard. This thing turned up, I don't know when. This is Resource Manager within the Azure portal. And this shows me the same stuff, more or less, and I'll show you the differences, as Resource Explorer. So I'm looking at my subscription. I'm signed in with an Azure AD account, so I can actually see multiple subscriptions. So let's just expand this one that I'm working on. And we have providers. So providers are the services in Azure, if you like, that are available on my subscription. And I'm provisioning resources that live inside a provider. And here are my resource groups. And there's my CB2 demo. And if I click on that, it shows me the JSON, the configuration for that resource group. And I can expand that, and I can see what resources are in here. And I can see an individual resource. Now, this actually gets a bit easier in Resource Explorer, but you can see here the last thing it started doing, this is a DSC extension. What I can see in here, and I can't see in Resource Explorer, are the deployments. So, I can come down here, I can look at my two serve master deployment. That's the JSON for the template that I uploaded. And I can see what it's doing. So these are the individual operations that are specified. So if you remember that blade where we saw the little icons for the deployments, there's a one-to-one correlation between these things, wonderful GUIDs, whoever invented a GUID, I hate him, and those pretty little icons. But that still doesn't tell us what's going on, which I think is a real shame. That's sort of missed there. So if I want to know what's going on, I have to go over here. Resources.azure.com. If you live in the new world of Azure, and you should, you will use this a lot. It will become your best friend. The view into the Azure Resource Manager. Now, you see down the left-hand side, it looks just the same. I've got my subscriptions. If I look in my Azure sub, I've got resource groups. I've got my CB2 demo. The one thing I've noticed with Resource Explorer, it doesn't always refresh itself properly. And what I found is if I come all the way back up to subscriptions, I can usually kick it into refreshing everything all the way down. So, yeah, really, come on. Let's try refreshing the page. My, yep, right. Oh. Okay, let's try this one. Here's what I prepared earlier. That's better. Right. So, here's my domain controller. And again, I can see through Resource Explorer what its config is. But in Resource Explorer, I can see something else as well. I can see something called an instance view. Now, you don't get this on everything. You do get it on virtual machines, and it's incredibly useful. This is a look at the current running instance of the machine. You get it on websites as well. So for each, I've got a provisioned resource. That resource is then starting and running. There's a VM running, consuming compute cycles. That machine boots. It generates debug output as it boots. That output gets fed into the instance view. And if I just scroll down here, you can see that it runs through the configuration that it's got. But importantly, this one's already running. Let's see if I can get this one to show me. There we go. Right. So I'm running a custom scripts extension. Basically, what that does is it drops an extension onto the virtual machine, downloads files onto the virtual machine, and allows me to execute a PowerShell script. So I can use that mechanism to do things like turn a server into an ADFS server or deploy my application, push the files on there. But I can't see what's going on. I can't RDP into the machine to tell. This tells me. So the script output and the DSC does the same. And provisioning the resources when it's going on does the same. Chucks out this debug information. It's a bit of a nightmare to read, but if I do things like write verbose in my PowerShell script, it'll turn up here. Standard out, standard error out, turn up there. And a little bit further down, we've got DSC resources, things like that. So the way DSC works is exactly the same as a resource template. It's the configuration I want my machine to have. Every time that machine boots, it checks. And it passes the resource file that I've downloaded that declares the configuration from the machine. And if it's deviated from that configuration, it puts it back. So my domain controller has a DSC config that says, you're a domain controller. This is the name of your domain. This is what your state should be. And it checks and applies every time. And I can see what's going on when I'm doing that. It took me a little while to find this. And I sort of groped around in debug hell for a while. So this is one of my big tip giveaway things. Use this, you will love it, it will save your life. Because if you're trying to build and deploy these things, remember I said the tooling can't help you? It doesn't know if your template's going to work. It doesn't even necessarily know if it's syntactically correct. When you deploy your template to Azure, it checks it to make sure it's syntactically correct, but that still doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work. This stuff will let you see what's going on under the hood as you're doing the deployment to work out what it is you've done wrong, where you missed the semicolon. Or in the case of my custom script extension, as it turns out, why you have an instance of Notepad running in the system context. Because as it turns out, the custom script extension, you download a load of files, and if you do the command you want to run, you say script.ps1. Anybody know what the default file type association is with a PS1 file on Windows? Anybody? Notepad, absolutely. So if you follow the documentation for the script extension, which is wrong, by the way, and you type in your script in the parameter, it shells a copy of Notepad and reports success because it executed the script. Fantastic. But you haven't got a working domain controller because it didn't execute the thing. That was interesting. These and other little nuggets are on my blog, and as I find more, I stick them up there.
So, what should Microsoft do to improve this?
What do I think Microsoft can do to improve this? That's an interesting question, actually, Magnus, because I've had a number of conversations with them over the past few months about this, and I think one of the things they could do, I didn't know Resource Manager was in there, for example. I think just putting this in the Resource Manager in the portal, making it more discoverable, would help. Documentation is an issue, But the reason it's an issue is because this is a young technology, and the pace of development, the documentation pace, hasn't caught up with the pace of development. I wouldn't let that stop you. I would use this. I think you should use this. The big thing Microsoft needs to do is actually be a bit more open about this. I mean, Magnus and I know there's quite a lot of emails fly around to the product team, and not necessarily clarity of messaging coming back, he said, trying to be tactful. It doesn't mean they're not listening. It just means that they don't necessarily have talking back to us at the top of their priority list. I think the tooling needs to improve. It's great sticking a resource in, but let's say I've got five resources and I want to easily work out a dependency. I'd really like to have some sort of GUI drag, drop, wire things up. You know, JSON is not the most human-friendly formats to start going in and tinkering with stuff. We've got to do some work on the tooling to build these things. The other thing I think we need to improve, and this is where we come in, is best practice around this stuff. So I have already come to the conclusion, he said, switching Windows for a moment, that this is the way to do resource templates. Don't build one big monolithic template. A, it's a nightmare to find anything. B, because Visual Studio is passing the JSON in real time, it doesn't do it in real time. You type a couple of characters and wait for them to appear on the screen. And C, they just don't deploy reliably. By breaking them down into individual templates and deployments, I can repeatedly deploy my ADFS server within an environment, time after time after time, do it, delete it, without affecting any of the rest of them. So I can break my development and testing down into components. And the other thing that I think we've really got to look at is the build and deploy story for these things. So that one is kind of interesting. This, I figured this out, well, decided this by myself, if you like. So you can see that I'm relatively anal. I've got a folder structure in here. So my DSC templates, I decided to put in a DSC folder. And I won't show you the scripts, but I've started to try and create scripts that are executed on build. So by default, those two files that turn up in a new project, they are marked as content, which means when you do a build in Visual Studio, it drops it into your output folder. In fact, let me show you that. So these things are dropped into our output folder when we build, and Microsoft have a handy script. And this handy script is a pain in the neck. It tries to do the right thing. Don't get me wrong. It's absolutely the right thing. It just doesn't quite do it in the right way. So what this does is when you run it, it uploads your artifacts to Azure Storage and deploys your template file. But up until about 2 weeks ago, it didn't think about subfolders and other assets. It only worked on everything being in a flat structure. And for some reason, isn't written to work on build output. It works on source. What do I mean by that? So the only way this will really work is if you right-click and run it from inside Visual Studio, at which point it uses a variable in PowerShell, $ps script root. That one right there. All of the paths this thing uses are relative to that, and that's great. But if you execute the command yourself in a PowerShell window, it fails horribly. What I'd like to see, what I think we need to think about, is standards for structuring resource template projects and a proper build process for them. So we store our artifacts and our nested templates and our PowerShell scripts in a standardized folder structure. And when we hit build, Visual Studio puts those in a standard folder structure in the output folder, creates the zip files we need, and can then automatically upload to Azure Storage and execute the deployment. Right now, Right now, as an IT pro, what this means is you're doing the thing you shouldn't. You're a dev writing the script and running it from within Visual Studio. Well, we've spent a long time getting our devs out of doing that. You know, if one of you guys turned up and handed me a build that literally you'd just done on your machine and said, deploy that, I'd tell you to turn around and go out of the office again. You know, we have build processes and we only take builds that are done by our build server and in a managed fashion. This really flies in the face of that. This comes back to what I was saying earlier on, it's an immature technology. I've got all of about 4 minutes left and I want to give the opportunity for questions. So let me finish off by saying this. These are brilliant. You absolutely should use them. If you're deploying anything in Azure now, you really should be using the resource model. You shouldn't be using the old PowerShell. And if you're using the resource model, this is the way to repeatedly and reliably push your stuff into Azure and have that great configuration as code, very easy to specify dev, test, UAT, whatever you like environments. And more importantly, those of us that are jobbing devs who have companies that work for customers, we use this template on our subscription. Brilliant. I hand it to Magnus, he uses it on his, and it works for him as well. Question, Magnus, or is that me time? So what Magnus is saying is when we provision something in the Ibiza portal, bear with me a sec, when we provision something in this portal, is it running a template? And the answer is yes, although there's kind of a proviso in there, because yes, if we're provisioning a resource manager resource.
Yes.
If I go to, I was just trying to think of a quick one. Anybody ever tried provisioning the SharePoint farm template in here? It's like three file servers. You get a domain controller, SharePoint server, a SQL server. There's a resource template for that. Well reminded. Thank you. Let me switch back to my slides. There's a resource template for that. Stuff you need to know. A handy set of links. Resource Explorer, resources.su.com. Documentation for what it is, if you look. There is a set of growing articles for documentation for resource templates, supplemented by blog posts from the guys that are writing them. Microsoft Virtual Academy, free training. DevOps Jumpstart, really useful. But most important, my blog, top one. Now, quick start templates. In GitHub, there are a whole raft of Azure resource templates for different scenarios. And interestingly, the template that deploys the SharePoint farm on Azure that you use is in GitHub as one of those starter for 10 templates. So remember I said don't necessarily copy and paste code to build your own templates? I still say that, create it new from the tooling. But you should absolutely go and have a look at those quick start templates, because the chances are somebody's thrown a template up that might not be quite what you want, but it'll be pretty close. You want to do a website, it'll be there. You want to do storage, it'll be there. Complicated domain controllers, they're there. SharePoint farms, they're there. Stand on the shoulders of the giants who've gone before you and utilize the stuff that they've got. And I think that's the real big thing that I want to see. I want to see a development community start to evolve around this stuff and start sharing best practice so we can really, you know, sharpen the corners on it and make it much more fit for production. With that, I'm kind of done. Has anybody else got any questions, or do you just want to grab me afterwards? You, sir.
This has been very heavily focused on resources like virtual machines and such, but can you also provision things like services or event hub services or something using this framework, as I would like to call it?
Yes, no, and maybe.
Repeat the question.
So I was coming to this. So the question was, I've only talked about virtual machines. Can we provision other stuff? And there were some examples thrown there. Event Hub, things like that. So the reason for yes, no, and maybe, yes. Ultimately, you should be able to provision everything in the Azure Resource Manager model using a resource template. However, no, I don't believe some of the things you mentioned are there yet, because they're bringing the different providers on stream as each of the teams is working on it and pulling their templates in. And actually, that's why you should keep your tooling up to date, because as the new tooling comes out, it refreshes the schemas, your new resources pop up, and suddenly you can deploy these things. So yes, the end game is everything you need to do. There was a question at the back earlier on. Yes, so genuinely, I'm not absolutely sure of the great long list of things you can do, but the tooling will help. Basically, it'll be in that list. If I want to add a new resource, is it in there? Not yet. So the question was, can we write simple plugins because you're using a specific build server? Let me dwell on that one for a second. He said conscious of time. So we use automated build. The custom script extension will allow you to do pretty much anything you like because it runs PowerShell and drops files on there. So your automated build can execute PowerShell, which generates stuff that goes in the custom script extension. So you should be able to do what you want. Writing custom things that are plugged into the resource model is not there yet, but I believe they would like it to be, but I have no idea of any kind of timescales for that kind of thing.
All right, thank you, Rick Hepworth. We're cutting you off, sir. This is it.
Thank you very much.